Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Tennis and Bagels podcast. My name is Andre, and I'm here with another special guest, a friend of mine from the time I was at Tennis Canada. It's the co-host of Matchpoint Canada, writer and journalist for Sportsnet, Ben Lewis. Hey Ben, how are you?
I'm great, Andre. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, just, you know, kind of excited a little bit for the off season, but at the same time, just a little sad because every time tennis ends, that there's always some days I'm like, well, I wish there was something happening, but it's not the end still. There's still the next gen, but we are going to be, you know, just reviewing a bit of the last week's the happenings of the Davis Cup. And just since you're at Matchpoint Canada, it's your area of expertise, is all the Canadians as well. So we're going to be, you know, seeing like how they performed. It wasn't our most special Davis Cup run, but at the same time, we had some positives to it, and yeah, I feel like especially Milos Raonic comeback to the Davis Cup team was extremely encouraging. If we did have a full team with at least one of Felix or Dennis playing that day, I think we would have made past Finland for sure. A bit of a shame for Diallo. He definitely got game. It was not his day that time, but yeah. What do you think of Canada's performance? And
I mean, certainly, I think it'll be viewed as a bit of a disappointment, especially given that I think expectations were, of course, higher just based on last year. You win the title last year for the first time in your country's history, and it really does feel these days like Canada is a tennis nation and one of the tennis powerhouses, not the tennis powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination, but probably if you're kind of running down the list of top tennis countries, I feel like Canada could be in the conversation as top five, given our athletes and our success over the recent years. So given the win last year, you're going in, and certainly I think on paper they were favorites in that quarterfinal matchup against Finland. But I think immediately once we noticed Felix Auger-Aliassime dealing with a lower body injury is unavailable, that complicated things right off the bat. Despite this, Canada had a great start. Milos Raonic getting his first match win in Davis Cup since 2018 was a fantastic storyline. I almost wish it would get a couple more headlines, and it would have if Canada had advanced past this tie into the semis, but it's a big deal to have a veteran who's been to a Wimbledon final and been one of Canada's trailblazers in a sense for this sport and its success back on the international stage and winning. But I mean, Gabriel Diallo in that second match, that to me was kind of the coin flip match. He's against Otto Virtanen of Finland, and they have somewhat similar games, big servers, kind of the big serve plus one style, and Virtanen was just a little sharper. And I felt like in the deciding doubles rubber, I mean, Vasek Pospisil just didn't look particularly healthy, and he probably needed to be the best doubles player on the court, and he wasn't. And I know he's been dealing with stuff with his shoulder and arm and back, didn't seem to have same pop on his serve as usual. We saw him getting some treatment at one point at the tail end of the first set, so it's unfortunate that he wasn't in the best possible shape. And I think that's kind of what happened overall in this tie, that Felix Auger-Aliassime was unavailable to go due to a lower body injury, and Vasek Pospisil, your anchor in doubles, was not his healthiest, and for that reason Canada left going home in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a bit unfortunate. The stars were aligned for Finland on that day, honestly, for them to go through with the Felix announcement. I totally agree. I think Diallo's match was definitely the coin toss. I don't think that he played. I don't think he was able to produce some of his best tennis from September. I think he played one of these matches. He would have easily, not easily, but he would have most likely won that match in Finland, and it would have been, it'd have been a great time. Felix was going to probably play one of the matches if Canada had advanced a bit further. So yeah, I don't think that really tells exactly like the full story that like how Canada has fallen so much. Like, it's obviously a disappointment, as you said, but all things considered, I think it was just an unlucky week for Canada to be playing the Davis Cup at that time. But with the team, if Milos decides that he wants to keep playing for the full of next year and goes on like to the Davis Cup, if we actually make it, which I think we do have still a pretty good chance of making back to the finals. If that happens again, I think if we get like a both Vasek, Felix, Dennis, and Milos all healthy in the same team, I think it could be extremely dangerous for next year. Fortunately, that's not what happened. But we ended up having Italy go on and win its first Davis Cup title since 1976, the first final since 1998. And honestly, everybody played well. Sonego did an extremely good part in the doubles. Matteo Rinaldi was a bit of a story, like in terms of how it was his first time playing for Italy in competition history. Won a very significant match against Popirin in the final. But the story is definitely Jannik Sinner. There's no going around it. Jannik Sinner coming back from a monstrous fall, almost like a bit like Felix did last year with a bit less titles, but ATP Finals final. First and second win against Novak Djokovic now in just 2 weeks, three matches. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, without question, I think Jannik Sinner is really the story of the tournament, right? For Davis Cup, he was undoubtedly the best player from all nations, from all players through this event. He's fantastic. I think, you know, he's already an elite player at this age, and particularly on an indoor hard court, that seems to be where he really, really shines. He just has so much firepower from the back of the court. He's so balanced on both his forehand and backhand wing. And as Alex Dimenauer said in that finals clinching match, which Sinner beat Dimenauer 6-3, 6-love, and Dimenauer is a heck of a competitor and a very good player. So to produce a scoreline like that is pretty telling of his quality of tennis. And Dimenauer afterwards says, Sinner is hitting the absolute crap out of the ball. And I mean, that's accurate. And that's sort of what he had to do against Novak Djokovic. If we look back into that semifinals against Serbia, because the Serbians were in a really fantastic position to make that final, getting the first opening singles win. And then you're lining up the world number one, Novak Djokovic, who is just coming off that ATP Finals victory, has to be the most confident tennis player in the world, is the best tennis player in the world. And, you know, he had three match points against Jannik Sinner, 3 points to clinch a spot in the finals for Serbia at 4-5, love 40 in the third set of their match. And for Jannik to not flinch in that scenario, to trust his weapons, to trust his game, to have that self-belief to play brave tennis, come up with a couple big serves and get out of that jam and come through in that match is just incredible fortitude. And you have to think it serves him really well leading into 2024, where I mean, of course, the conversation around Sinner now is like the next step is winning a Grand Slam title. And I think a lot of people are discussing, is he a guy who can win a slam in 2024? Absolutely he can. I mean, will he? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not going to proclaim that he definitely will, but he of course has absolutely all the tools to do so. And what a massive moment, recovering from, you know, a tough ATP Finals loss to Novak to lead Italy to its first Davis Cup win in 47 years. That's a pretty incredible end to your season.
Yeah, I think it was a really great way for him to season. I think it was just everything just kind of fell through like well for him in that regards. Like, even if he didn't win the ATP Finals, he got like some great experience. One, playing in front of his crowd, getting a huge feeling of like what would probably be a Davis Cup at home if the format was still the old one, or if they had to qualify. Beating Djokovic for the first time ever, it was probably the match of the year, or if at least top five, if not top three. Coming to you know, play that match against him again. I think that's the experience of just the previous two matches, I think, were crucial for him to come through with that one. I was so surprised with how he was serving. The serve failed him a little bit just to fall down like those three match points, but and he wasn't in danger the entire set on serve until he actually ended up serving for it. But yeah, I feel like Jannik Sinner's adjustments this year were just incredible. I think the things that he pulled off, like with just the serve, like I remember like last year I was watching him serve and thinking, He's got some good speed, he's got some good placement, but very often he would just like miss wildly. Like it's not a first serve that you want to miss that badly all the time. And I think he just made the proper adjustments that he needed to. And he showed in his confidence. When he stepped in against Demonor, I think there was almost no doubt in his mind. Almost like when he did like in Toronto, like when he stepped on the court, there was almost no doubt in anyone's mind that he should be the winner. Maybe some nerves in the beginning, and he just found his rhythm, his groove, and just there was no stopping him. And Demonor just had no weapons to hurt him, unfortunately for Australia, second year in a row where he lost comprehensively, basically last year against Felix and this year against Jannik Sinner. But one of the things that I found, like, Sinner had not certainly improved that much, but I think he just showed up in his game that I didn't expect to see as much because he's such a power baseline player. Is how well he volleys. Like, he's just competent at the net. Like, his volley technique is great. His approach shots, like, seem to be very just, like, rational. He doesn't just rush the net. I think it's going to be very interesting if he can utilize all these tools, especially against, like, challenge Djokovic, Alcaraz, and the Slams.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, which it's definitely overlooked at it. I never really hear anybody discussing Jannik Sinner's volleys because we look at what he can do from the back of the court, his baseline game, his power, his defense and agility, the way he can defend both wings, sliding skills, which we know come from his earlier days as being a fantastic skier, and so much flexibility. But you're right, he has good hands to the net, and I think that's such a difference maker. You look at how big of a difference maker it is for a player like Carlos Alcaraz, that he can close the net in a heartbeat. I mean, Sinner is not as strong at net as Alcaraz is. He's not coming forward as much, but to have that in your toolbox is so important, especially when you're playing a guy like Novak. Like, you need a myriad of ways to win points. You need a myriad of ways if you want to, you know, hit your way through Novak Djokovic. You can't just be great from the baseline. You can't just have the big serve. Like, you have to do a lot of things very, very well, which Jannik proved he can do. The stat I love is he's only the third player to beat Djokovic twice in the span of 12 days, joining, you know, Rafael Nadal and Andy Murray. That's a pretty strong camp right there. So I mean, some of it I'm sure is a little bit surface based, where like his game is elevated a little bit more on the indoor courts. He talked about how comfortable he is indoors. So I mean, I look at his season, it's an outstanding season, and then the only knock on it is looking at the Grand Slam results, where he went round of 16 Australian Open, second round of the French Open, which is a big letdown, semifinals at Wimbledon, which is a good result without a doubt, but he didn't really offer much resistance in that semifinal, if I recall, and round of 16 at the US Open, where he kind of physically wilted in a fifth set to Sasha Zverev. So that's sort of the next question he has to answer. Is he built for best of five over a 2-week period of time? And I know in the summer after that US Open loss, he said his biggest focus was improving physically. I don't know if that necessarily means we're going to see him stronger and add some weight. I'm not necessarily sure, or physical training in terms of conditioning and endurance, getting those areas of his game better, because as you said, he served really well. He has volleys. There's a lot to the game itself that's, you know, elite level and capable of beating absolutely anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's been a bit of a question before, because he was the first time he's ever reached a Grand Slam semifinal. And he was a lot of questioning about like whether he was able to, you know, translate all that success to best of five, as you said. Like, it's definitely going to be the question. To be fair, I really do hope that he can do it, because this game is so exciting to watch. I think the Grand Slam just lose a lot in terms of now the top four, one of the top four players in the world. It's like making a little bit like, I ain't making all these comparisons all the time. We make them like with the big four and Andy Murray, but like now I feel like we've got a pretty solid top four in the world. Got Medvedev, Djokovic, obviously, and Alcaraz. And now with Jannik Sinner, they're all playing very well, very confidently. And I think it's got really good potential for great matches if they can go through in the final stages of slams and play each other. I think it's going to be very interesting, very exciting, especially if Jannik Sinner is able to make more semifinals and offer that resistance that he hasn't really been able to do much of. Except maybe last year when he didn't push Djokovic to like five sets, I think it was in the Wimbledon, the quarterfinals.
Yep.
Yeah, and crumbled a bit in the last three sets, but yeah.
Right. No, well, that's right. And I think it really makes for a pretty fascinating Australian Open, because you look at this past year's Australian Open and really felt like Novak Djokovic didn't have a challenger. I mean, the way he just coasts, and I know he's always going to be the favorite going into the Australian Open, hands down. I mean, he's won it 10 times. He's so confident there. He loves the surface. He's the best hardcore player of all time, without a doubt. I mean, he's the best player of all time. So all things are sort of stars aligning for Djokovic to always have success in Australia. But this past season, it almost felt a little too easy for him in terms of who was in front and who was there to properly challenge. Nadal's body sort of breaking down and going out early. Carlos Alcaraz not being available to play. Jannik Sinner's game was nowhere near where it is right now. And you just didn't have the Holger Rune probably not fully developed. Some sort of names kind of crashing out early, that you didn't have someone truly properly challenging Djokovic towards the top and towards the latter stages of the tournament. And even Medvedev, I believe, went out to Sebastian Korda. So a lot of strange things happened at this season's Australian Open, which made it almost a very easy title for Djokovic. I think that's going to change a lot in 2024. Djokovic is still going to be the favorite without a doubt, but Jannik Sinner is obviously very much knocking on the door.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is going to play. He didn't last year. I think Medvedev is a lot sharper now. I think he was sort of mentally not in a strong place earlier in this season, and he's there. So your top four, as you said, is really, really strong. And it feels like there's a gap between those four players and the rest of the tour right now.
Yeah. And I think especially, as you say, like Djokovic has hands down the favorite. I think it's always not the smartest decision to always like bet against him so much. But I think the doubt is there. I think if Djokovic will be thinking about it as well, especially after losing twice to Jannik Sinner. The pressure of Davis Cup kind of probably has gone to him a bit. I could see he was not as sharp as like fatigue was probably creeping in a bit. But he's still playing some fantastic tennis, especially more towards like second and third set, and he is definitely cares about the Davis Cup. I feel like the narrative that's saying that Djokovic doesn't care and he was a loss that he can just like shrug it off, like I don't think it's true. I think he really wanted it, otherwise he wouldn't have gotten to triple match point in that match. Mm-hmm. I think he definitely wanted to do this for Serbia. He always wants to do this for Serbia. He loves this country so much. I think it almost weighs on him. But yeah, he's definitely looking at these guys now and thinking, well, I got to put the prep on for the Australian Open, because I don't want anyone to challenge me anymore on this one. It's like he definitely wants to be still the guy to beat. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I think he knows he has to be at his 100% level. He has to be peaking for the Australian Open if he wishes to win it again. And as this past season he won it with an injury. I don't think that's going to be possible for next year, where I know he was dealing with a tear in the hamstring, which he just sort of managed between matches, had it heavily taped up, and still got through seven matches. I think the bigger question for the younger guys, I know Alcaraz did it at Wimbledon, obviously, in that epic final, is can you beat Novak in a best of five match? Best of five is just a different animal, and he's without a doubt the best of the world in the best of five format. We've seen guys get wins in best of three. Best of five is the different challenge now.
Yeah, for sure. It's where Djokovic has excelled, like where he Nadal and Federer specifically have developed their games to always be able to basically peak in the slams and do their best there. And that's why they dominated. That's why they're the biggest champions the world has ever seen on that stage, specifically in the Grand Slam, but also everywhere else. But the Grand Slams have been far and wide dominated, even if the guys have been able to break through in the 1000s and the other tournaments like a Halle, where Federer always used to play, Barcelona. But yeah, it's the Grand Slams where it's at now. Like, everybody has to, you know, focus as best as they can to go into that best of five and challenge the best of the best over seven matches, which is seven matches in 2 weeks is a huge challenge for everyone. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess now that we're talking a little bit more of like in the general and like just the 2024 perspective, I know that this year wasn't the best year for Canadian players in general. Felix was struggling a lot, so much with an injury, and so was Dennis. Milos returned, but he obviously is a return from like so long without playing. We couldn't expect more than what I actually did. The wins that he's got were fantastic, I think he's in a pretty good shape right now. We need to see like what goes on like in the future. But what do you think is up for a Canadian in 2024?
Yeah, I do think it's going to be, I'm hopeful and optimistic that it's going to be a big bounce back year. Speaking on the men's side, for Felix Auger-Aliassime, he seemed to drop down to world number 29, which is where he's sitting right now. Thankfully, will keep a seed going to the Australian Open, which is massive, honestly, because he was at risk of really plummeting outside of a seed if he had not backed up and defended his title in Basel. So, you know, as porous and disappointing a season it was for Felix, particularly midway and all the way through the summer, I mean, he had a stretch where he lost 12 of 15 matches, just didn't look right, looked like he lacked confidence, he wasn't serving nearly as well as 2022, managing a lower body injury. He was sick when he played the French Open and like bowed out really meekly to Fanini in a straight sets match. I remember his US Open match against Mackenzie McDonald, which, keep in mind, that's a tough first round draw, but he was, I think, one of 14 in breakpoint opportunities in that match, like just not executing and winning points when it matters most. I feel like he regained his confidence with that win indoors in Basel and the Swiss indoors, which he's now won twice. Huge to at least get a title to kind of close out your season. And I think he can really reset now and get some good sort of preseason training. I really like that he tweeted, "I'm back," after he won that Swiss event. That told me he was like, okay, he believes again. He feels like it's coming. He felt like he'd been practicing well. I know he was almost shell-shocked when he lost in Toronto at the National Bank Open opening round to Max Purcell. He thought it was probably a good draw for him to gain some momentum and get things going. So I think, you know, he's reinstilled the belief in his game. He's serving better, that he can kind of fully reset now over the next month or so and be prepared to really come out strong in 2024. Without a doubt, he should be back in the top 20. That's, you know, no question. He's a top 20 player. Can he knock his way back into the top 10? His work ethic, everybody says, is fantastic. He's always working on all these elements of his game that he needs to improve. He can beat top 10 players. We've seen it time and time again against the toughest players on the tour. He seems to perform pretty well against your Holger Runes and Tsitsipases and Rublevs. He has wins over all these guys. He has a win over Alcaraz. He has a win over Djokovic. He has a win
had a win over Federer when Federer was on tour. So he can challenge the very best in the game. I think 2024, he really rebounds. If we talk about Milos Raonic, as you said, I mean, I think he exceeded expectations, honestly, in his return, given a lot of people thought he was probably going to retire and hang it up and never play again. For him to get a win at Wimbledon, for him to beat Francis Tiafoe at the National Bank Open, to get a Davis Cup victory for the first time in 5 years, that's a great story. And now the question is, how long does he want to continue? And can he stay healthy and sort of be very selective with his calendar about which tournaments he wants to play, really managing his body and his time so little things don't break down? And I've always said with his service weapon, I mean, to have something that dangerous in your back pocket, he can beat so many players. And a healthy Milos Raonic in his prime was always a top 10 player. We're not going to see that again, rankings-wise. I think a lot of people can understand that. But he, for me, at this stage of his career, can be the kind of guy that it's the last player you want to draw in a first round as like a seeded player, that you got to face Milos Raonic in the first round of Australia or something like that. I think he can be that kind of dangerous threat lurking in a draw. And if he's healthy, that booming serve going, he can sneak some big upset wins and have a good season if he stays healthy.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with all you said in that. I think Milos, for me, like one of the things that I would, you know, like I guess like just wishful thinking in that regard, but it would be nice to see him like maybe getting another title. Me thinking right now about Newport, it's going to be the last time Newport is going to be on tour. It's normally a weaker draw. People are coming off of Wimbledon. I think it would be a really good place for Milos if he decides to play there. I don't know what his schedule is like, but I feel like it could be a really good opportunity if he decides to play over there. It's like coming back to North America, playing on the grass, like just right before Montreal. I think it could be an interesting addition to his calendar if he decides he wants to go there.
That's a good choice. I was just looking. I mean, as you say, like, can Milos win another title? It's crazy to me that he hasn't won a title since 2016. I'm just looking. He hasn't won a title since winning in Brisbane in 2016. It's almost like some of his results, like he should have, I feel like, a number of more titles. It's surprising that he's never won a Masters 1000. He's been close in the past. I know he's lost a few finals there. You know, he made the finals of the ATP World Tour in 2016, losing to Milos. He has, you know, beyond the Wimbledon final, how many times did he go quarterfinals or better at the Australian Open? Five times. Semifinals of Wimbledon in 2014. So he's made so many deep runs in tournaments that it's almost surprising that he hasn't racked up a few more titles in his career, frankly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely one of the byproducts of being born in that generation where you had to catch all the Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic, and Murray in the surprising 2016 season. It's just so many players got unlucky with that. And I think Milos also ran into his Masters 1000 finals. I think all of them he lost one to Nadal and other two to Novak Djokovic. So it just goes to show just how dominant these guys are. And If Milos was 22 now, I think he would have won like a couple of Masters 1000s and maybe even a Grand Slam over the next decade, because that's where he came was at, like in terms of like how intelligent he played. He wasn't the player with all the weapons, but the weapons that he used them so well, and he'd excel in them so well that, like as you said, like the serve, it'd be really awesome to see him lifting a trophy. Another one before he decides to call it a career.
100%.
Yeah. And for Felix, definitely, like the guy's young, 22 only. So the sky's the limit still. Like maybe he had a bit of a fallback from a super 2022 season, maybe some emotional, physical fatigue. As you said, like he was also dealing with some injuries. I'm just really hoping that he can up his game, get back into the top 20, get some confidence, maybe win another title or two. And then see if he can like break back into the top 10, another big run in a Grand Slam. He's definitely going to be right up there. So I don't have any doubt that Felix has the level still. And I think he has the belief. It just needs things to work together, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean to overlook Denis Shapovalov, by the way. I just realized I didn't even give a sort of a diagnosis on his game and maybe what to expect for 2024. Obviously, 2023, not a success for Denis. But at the same time, I mean, he's been absent since Wimbledon. He hasn't played since the grass court season, which is kind of crazy to think. And unfortunately, his ranking taking a big hit as a result of that. I mean, he's dropped outside the top 100. There were a couple positives, I think, on the season for Denis, particularly the way he played at Wimbledon, I thought was sort of the best that we saw him. And he made the round of 16. It's just really unfortunate that a knee injury sort of surfaced in that round of 16 match to Roman Safelin, because it looked like a really nice opportunity to at least make a quarter. And there was maybe even a path there to make the semifinals if he were healthy. And I thought he played pretty well kind of at the front end of the season down in Australia. I know he lost to Novak in Adelaide, and then he had that like great five-set battle with Hubert Hurkacz, I think in the third round of Australia. That was kind of a coin flip match. That sort of tells me, like, a healthy Denis, like, I kind of think that's what his level is, something similar to a Hubert Hurkacz, where you're a very solid sort of top 10 to 15 player. It's just the difference is, you know, Hurkacz and other guys like Dimonauer, for example, they're doing it on a consistent week-to-week basis. They're producing like a solid level on a consistent week-to-week basis, tournament by tournament, where they're always getting at least a few wins, and you're seeing them pretty regularly in quarterfinals or semifinals. And that's just what we have not seen from Denis over the past couple of years. It's very, very hot and cold. You'll get a big time run to the semis somewhere, and then you'll get three straight opening round losses. Like, that's something that's so important for him to clean up. Maybe, you know, he might always be this streaky player, and that's kind of what you have to accept. If you accept that's what Denis Shapovalov is, maybe you sort of just temper expectations and enjoy the highs when they come. But I hope he can kind of rebuild and reset and be healthy for the start of 2024 and get his ranking back up.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking at his career right now as in, like, maybe he just needed a reset time. Maybe the injury was there, but then it was also maybe a mental thing. He might do well in focusing a bit in family now. He got engaged this year as well. So we know that historically a lot of players come out better out of that because they can just put some perspective in their lives, and then tennis becomes like a little bit less of a burden to carry for them. And I don't know, maybe this could be a part of what Denis needs in his career. Maybe just a little bit of focus outside and just relax a bit on court, just to be, you know, just get those shoulders more relaxed and more loose, and just can like let it rip on the backhand and forehand. Like, so I think it could be it for him. But yeah, like, I think it's a lot of wait and see on that. Is he coming out healthy? I hope he does. I really hope he does come back and play some amazing tennis. I'm not sure if he's in the road to qualify to Australia. I think he would need to go to qualifying right now. But yeah,
I'll have to see on that. Which would be difficult. I mean, I hope that's not the case. It would be direct entry is definitely what you want, because that would be a big setback if he does have to go through qualifying. I think he might still be in direct entry, but I'd have to double check on that.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, I guess that would cover it all. Thank you so much for being around. Do you have any final remarks to say about self, Canadians, new projects coming up?
Yeah, sure. I mean, thanks firstly so much for having me. I will say, beyond if you want to tune into our podcast, Matchpoint Canada, you can find us, you know, on all socials at Matchpoint Can on Twitter, or X, I suppose we call it now. And also, I recently launched a Substack. So, you know, just kind of keep up with my tennis writing there. If you go to my social page at Ben Lewis MPC, find my Substack and feel free to subscribe, just a way to keep up with my tennis writing. I generally launch a new newsletter every couple weeks, just to sort of share my thoughts on what's happening tennis wise in the season. So thanks so much for having me, Andre.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks so much for talking, and it was a great discussion as well. I'll leave all the links in the description for Ben's socials and Ben's Substack, so you can follow in there on YouTube or on Spotify, wherever the links are going to be available. And you can also follow us at Tennis and Bagels. I'm at Rollingberg Andre, and I'll see you guys around. Thanks so much for being here again, Ben, and Bye, y'all.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.